Oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Sing it, fellas.
Oh, I wish I was in
Dixieland. I was born early, Lord, one frosty morn. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
Thank you for indulging me. This is the Fakeologist Show. It is Tuesday, August the 20th, year of our Lord, 2024. And Friday, we were off. We don't broadcast Fridays here at the Fakeologist Radio Network. But that was the official day when Elvis Presley was removed from the stage, albeit sort of in the... at the well past his glory days by a couple years anyway. And tonight also is the Lynn or Tell show. And Lynn, I hear you breathing. So I think your mic is working. How you doing?
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Did you hear the great Elvis Presley in his American trilogy?
Yeah. there seems to be a lot of mythology whirling around The Legend of Elvis.
Oh, it's one of the biggest legends / mythologies out there, is it not? Is there anyone else that where they memorialize any American's death all these years later for an entire week? Can you think of anyone?
We've had some.
No, year after year after year, I'm talking about. Apparently, it's Elvis week at Graceland. I went to Graceland a year ago or so, or just under a year ago. It is quite not much of a house.
Actually, Graceland is in the news now.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone's trying to steal it. I don't know what they mean by that. But.
Well, they were saying it was used as collateral, and then they called in a loan, but it was a phony loan. Yeah, that thing is all settled, I believe. But I'm just reading here. Just people still go to this day for a couple days a week and have a candlelight vigil. And I guess most of his fans are pushing 70, 80. Elvis would be 90 next year. I don't think he died on the day he said he did, although it's certainly possible. But for the most part, if he lived a second life and lived well, he would have been 90 or 89 this year. So, I don't know. What do you think? You think he died that day?
Look, everyone knew that Elvis was obese. He was obese.
Would he be obese by today's standards? He'd be normal.
You take a look at him on that stage, the costume, the way they costumed him up.
I did watch it. He did not look obese by today's standards. I agree he was obese maybe by that standards of the 60s and 70s, but wow.
Plus, he was on all kinds of drugs, and all the accounts you read indicate that everybody knew he was his doctors were giving him all kinds of pharmaceuticals,
but whatever then again, he wanted.
Of course, they said that about Michael Jackson,
right? And Matthew Perry.
Adam Kurt, they said that Michael Jackson was being overprescribed all kinds of drugs.
Yeah, and Matthew Perry too.
Right. Well, it's a little different because in the case of Michael Jackson, Adam Curry claims that he interviewed Michael Jackson like a week before the alleged death when Jackson was in deep, deep preparation for a big tour he was going to do.
Oh, right. I watched that movie. They released that tour footage as a movie.
So how could he have been? And, Michael Jackson, his whole show, half of his show is his dancing, right?
Oh, yeah. It was a big deal. Yeah, I enjoyed the movie back
then.
It's
like Madonna. A lot of Madonna's stuff was lip-synced. It was her voice.
I think most of these guys lip-synced. The whole scandal behind those two twits that were caught lip-syncing,
Milli Vanilli,
right. But I think for optimal sound, of course you lip-sync.
But the thing is, half of their show is dance, with Madonna or with Michael Jackson, is to see them leaping, cavorting.
But let's get back to Elvis. Let's talk. Yeah, I don't want to talk about
Elvis wasn't dancing. Elvis was not dancing.
He was prancing, and he was on his knees, and he was waving his arms in a fan-like fashion. He was the conductor.
Why do people want to resist the idea that Elvis was addicted to all kinds of drugs?
Oh, I'm not doubting it. I'm not doubting it at all. I'm just saying.
That's not the problem I had with Elvis.
Okay, go ahead. You were a young chicken back then, weren't you?
What's that?
You were a young chicken back then. Back in when he was big.
I have to say, my generation regarded Elvis as passé.
Oh, wow.
Especially when he went to the White House. They let him carry a loaded revolver around in the White House, and he sucked up to Richard Nixon. And we were convinced the only reason he did that is because he was jealous of John Lennon and the Beatles.
Right.
And he was. He was. Elvis went around all the time complaining about the negative impact that the Beatles were having on American youth with respect to drug use, because we were all smoking weed. Meanwhile, he was doing enough barbiturates to kill a horse.
Kill a small elephant, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to hear this. Okay. Yeah,
all right, are you not an Elvis fan? Can I put you down?
I like a lot of his music. I still listen to a lot of his music.
Okay, good.
Don't particularly like him as a personality, but they do say he was very generous with his friends. He wasn't super greedy like some.
No, I don't think so. No, I agree.
Right,
with that.
But as far as I'm concerned, he's being completely manipulated by Colonel Tom Parker. So it's not like it's even Elvis we're talking about. You know, it's this management team that was getting him up on stage.
But isn't that an old story? Managers that manipulate. I mean, that happens today more often than it doesn't happen. That's just the way it is. Look at K-pop. Yeah. I put a really good video on FakoTube, FakoTube.com. That's our user-supported platform. And it was talking about the K-pop, dark secrets, how these people are manufactured and manipulated. It's really crazy.
Well, K-pop. It's very synthetic. I mean, obviously, you don't know how much of it's digital and everything else. But when you talk about Elvis, see, that's the thing. When you go back to those times, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, right on up into the 90s, there wasn't as much simulation going on stage as far as the stage act. You still had legitimate bands playing live.
Right.
And, you know, legitimate performances. But now, and I made this point with something I posted in the forum, because I'm continuing to post a lot of stuff about movie special effects.
Fakeologistforums.com. Okay, where did you post it?
It's no great revelation, but I posted a link to something which I guess everybody has watched, which is the...
What's the forum? What forum is it in under Fakeologist Forums?
Okay, the thread would be warfare in the movies. I may have to let me page down a little more here.
And I want to read a fairly long email I got from one of the Fakeologist listenerships. If you can indulge me in that as well, I want to make sure I do that. Let's see, who's it from here.
So, yeah, here's I wonder why this doesn't come up real quick, because I just post. This is weird. I understand how this forum always works.
Well, what's the problem?
Because it doesn't come up in the order in which I posted things. So let me do a search.
Okay.
Just
tell me. I can look for your name, Psy Girl.
Actually, it should be listed there, but for some reason it doesn't show up.
Well, on the right side, you've got the latest from Steve Kirsch and coronavirus hoax. So that's, and then you got the Gemma O'Doherty thing under PsyOps hoaxes.
Right,
If you look on the right, that shows the latest post.
I got it right here. Here we go. Jump to post. Okay. Before digital graphics, spectacle.
What
was
forum
almost,
is it? Because you're not showing your screen, so I can't even see that.
PsyOps and hoaxes.
All right, PsyOps and hoaxes. Okay.
Some places are total closed movie sets.
Okay, right, gotcha. Louisiana is for movies. Okay, that's the old one. That's an old one.
Right.
Let's go to the latest one.
Let me share this screen.
All right, I'm sharing the screen too.
There we go.
Okay, you want to share your screen. Okay, I'm sharing the same thing. Go ahead.
Before digital graphics, they had to fake it for real. You know, I have to go through this because a lot of people out there aren't old enough to remember when movies really were very real. Real stunts, you know, real dramatic special effects, a real cast of thousands. Real performances, real risk of injury from some of the stunts.
Right.
People will watch this now
and say
and they'll
it's digital.
Think it's all digital. So I'm going to show just a few minutes of it.
Ben,
this is the day, Judah. It's between us now.
Yes.
That's Charles.
This
Heston.
Is the day.
Yeah. By the way, to me, this is the considered. There's another. Epic scene in this movie too, which is a sea battle, a naval battle between Roman galleys and pirates. That and this chariot race scene are the two biggest scenes in the whole movie, and were talked about forever.
And this is Ben-Hur. What year was that?
1959. I was born in 51.
Wow.
Right. And 59, I think, was the same year. Well, the Ten Commandments came out around that time, which also starred Charlton Heston.
He was doing everything.
Yeah, he's huge. But I'm telling you, this chariot race scene, people were talking about it. It is the defining, if you want to look at the peak, the high watermark of movie special effects and wild-ass stunts. And believe me, remember, America's the home of the Western.
Right.
So whenever you watch those old cowboy movies, they got horses all over the place. And when they bring the cavalry in, then they got to have a whole bunch of horses. And, you know, that's difficult to choreograph. It's not like doing it digitally. Everyone raved. Remember the 300 Spartans? You remember that?
Okay. Yeah, I remember. I remember that.
It was a big, everybody go out and watch this movie, the 300 Spartans. I went out and watched it. I said, it's a fucking cartoon. It's animation. What's the big deal?
It says here the chariot race required 15,000 extras on a set constructed on 18 acres of backlot in Cinecittà Studios outside of Rome.
Europe. They had to go all the way over to Europe to do it.
Tour buses visited the set every hour. 18 chariots were built, Judah, with half being used for practice.
Look, he's driving.
The race took 5 weeks to film.
Go ahead, talk over it. I'm just going to show the visual.
It said here, during the 18-day auction of MGM props, costumes, and memorabilia that took place in May 1970 when new studio owner Kirk Kerkorian was liquidating the studio's assets, a Sacramento restaurateur paid $4,000 for a chariot used in the film.
And the other big one, of course, and also these things stood in tremendous risk of bankrupting a studio, really. As we were told, like Cleopatra was another one, Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, Rex Harrison, huge, absolutely huge. They also had a major naval battle in that was kind of the climax of the film. And Liz Taylor apparently got sick during the filming. They had to reschedule. So when they talk about films that, so to speak, bankrupted the studio in the sense that they cost so much money to make that it'd be a few years before the studio even made back their investment. You can see how
the desert sequences were all set to be filmed in Libya until authorities in the country, a Muslim nation, realized that the film was promoting Christianity. The government ordered MGM out of the country, forcing the studio to shift filming to Spain, which has the only desert in Europe. the only Hollywood film to make the Vatican approved film list.
Yes,
yeah, in the category of religion.
Right. This is so Ben-Hur is based on a novel written in the 19th century by a man who later became something of a celebrity, a Union general in the Civil War named Lew Wallace. Lew spelled L-E-W. Lew Wallace. He was later became a political protege of Ulysses S. Grant. And when Grant was elected president in 1872, I guess 1870, no, it would have been 1868, Grant was elected president. He appointed Lew Wallace to be the territorial governor of New Mexico. At the time, New Mexico was undergoing a lot of violence. Lincoln County was having range wars, and it was Governor Lew Wallace, the author of the book Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ. That's what he called it, A Tale of the Christ, because he was basing it all on, sort of biblical stuff. Lew Wallace is the one who personally ordered Pat Garrett to go out and hunt down Billy the Kid, which he did. And that is actually shown in an excellent, very long, epic Sam Peckinpah movie called Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. I highly recommend that movie. And they show Lew Wallace in that, asking Pat Garrett to go take care of Billy the Kid. But anyway, Lew Wallace wrote the novel. And it's not the most historically accurate novel. For example, The second most famous scene in the movie is this naval battle between pirates and the Roman Navy. And in it, and Ben-Hur has essentially become a galley slave. He's rowing, he's holding the oar, you know, with the other ones down below rowing this boat, this Roman war galley. Well, as a matter of fact, the Romans did not employ slaves to row their war galleys. They employed highly trained professional rowers who also could fight. The idea of slaves rowing galleys really doesn't come about until the Spanish Habsburgs in the 16th century. But no, the Romans did not use slaves for their navy, which was a very professional organization. So Lew Wallace hadn't done so well on his Roman history there. As far as the chariot race, that may be a little more accurate. So you notice this is like a 16-minute sequence.
The chariot race was shot MOS without sound.
Yeah, you see this? Look at this. I mean, look at it. Could you telling me they could do that digitally?
Of course, but this
but
was.
But this is for real.
No, I know it is. This was added in post-production when the decision was also made not to have any music throughout the sequence.
Well, because the sound itself was so exciting. Let me turn up the sound.
The 300 set still.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. I mean, come on. Chariot races were extremely dangerous. So, I don't know. Do we want to go through the whole thing? I
mean, no, it's okay.
Look at the scene. I mean, look at how they come around the... Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's pretty
good.
Now,
the claim was that someone was actually killed by accident during the filming of this. I have never been able to confirm that. And remember, those people in the stands, that's a cast of thousands.
If you like Snopes, Snopes says it's false.
Yeah, well, Snopes is real reliable, aren't they? I mean, who knows?
I know, we don't know.
The thing is, every one of those 10,000 people that had to participate in this spectacle, this holy spectacle, because it is it became modern religion in a way. Ben-Hur, Tale of the Christ, you know, on the big screen. Wow. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Look at that guy being dragged. Come on, you think that stuntman didn't take some risks? Now, that probably was a dummy, but now look at the thousands of people. Every one of that cast of thousands has to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Right, not to let the details out of the bag before the movie comes out.
Right. So, I don't know. I don't want to make just you. Look at this. This is just amazing. If you never had the patience to sit through this movie and watch it, at least watch this 16-minute scene. Some great acting by Stephen Boyd, who I think steals the show. I get kind of tired of Charlton Heston. He's so righteous, you know. Whereas Stephen Boyd is the villain. And this goes on and on.
By the way, the guys in the chat are saying YouTube killed the stream when you were playing that. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
What?
Well, because it's copyright. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I'm seeing it.
Well, you're seeing it. You're not on the stream. I don't know. If anyone wants to check it out, we're also on FakoTube, FakoTube.com. We
you
should
mean
be
to
on,
tell me, we're should, watching this.
We
we're
should be
this.
On BitChute, BitChute.com. I think we're streaming on BitChute. I haven't had a chance to check. Okay, let's move on to the next topic there. What is
right,
the next topic?
This was important. This was important to me.
Yeah.
because I want people to understand what goes into producing a big budget Hollywood movie.
Now, you've talked about it before.
Right. And then you will understand 9/11.
Okay,
perfectly.
Good. Yes. Tie it, bring it home to 9/11. That's good.
Well, 9/11, I made a placard. People can copy it if they like.
Where is it?
This placard up. Let me find it. Placards. All right. 9/11 was a movie.
9/11 was a movie, yes.
Let's see if I can share this.
Yeah, if it's in a window. Wait, I see something there.
No, All of a sudden, I cannot join this. It looks like it kicked me out for some reason.
No,
oh, that's Opera. Wait a minute. Ah, damn it. I got to get back in. That's what happens when I open multiple browsers.
Yeah, okay. It gets tricky.
All right, let me stop sharing and then go back and see if I can share this. Here we go. Nah, it won't let me. Window.
Yeah, share a window.
Entire screen. Okay.
Just share a window, whatever window it's in, and I can bring it up.
All right, let's try.
Don't forget, everyone, shortfake.com/chat. Let me start reading a note.
They won't let me. Oh, here we go. Wait a minute. Damn.
Okay, this is from JMJ.
Here we go.
Okay. All right, what do we got here? That's the chariot race. You keep sharing that.
Yeah. Anyway, I got something on my desktop here, and for some reason it won't let me share a preview, will it?
Don't know.
Well, it's this simple. 9/11 was a movie made for TV news. If you continue clinging to the propaganda script of a terrorist attack, quote unquote, then you're still living in the movie and are propping up a state-sponsored, media-driven illusion. That's it. And that should be all we have to say about 9/11. Hello?
I'm listening.
Yeah. A movie made for TV news. And Gaza is exactly the same. So,
I agree. Gaza is the same.
But anyway, I make the point that before digital graphics, they had to fake it for real, meaning they had to stage a super convincing simulation that closely approximated reality on the screen or on camera. Right? So the special effects, the dangerous stunts, the cast of thousands or 10,000 had to be real. So I'm asking people to remind, as they watch that 16-minute sequence from Ben-Hur, how expensive and how technically challenging it was to produce spectacles like this before the development of digital graphics, which only really started in the late 80s.
Right.
The insurance policies and the non-disclosure agreements must have been incredibly complex, very carefully worded, and they got an army of lawyers to enforce all contracts. And that's what an integrated capstone event is. The movies were the model for this.
Absolutely.
Right. So I show, I have a discussion in here of early 19th century warfare and the cavalry charge, since people are talking about whether war is real or fake. And remember, the impression we have of war comes either from newsreels, from the narrative words of war correspondents, paid professional war correspondents, but mostly we get it from the movies. So I was looking for an example of where, and I guess the 70s and the 80s are where you really see this arrive at a peak of realism, because this particular film about Bonaparte, Napoleon Bonaparte, I consider the most spectacular and authentic representation of the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, long before Hollywood could fake it with digital graphics. Let me share this. I'll just show a minute or a minute or two of it. But
okay, let's see it. What do you got? And yeah, YouTube did conk out because we played the movie Ben-Hur.
It'll probably do the same with this.
Well,
this is another movie I recommend.
Well, don't play too much.
There's no plot spoilers in it because it's
No. It's just that YouTube will start tracking it.
Right.
I think you got about 10 or 20 seconds, and then it'll.
I just left a link for the whole movie, so people can watch it. But
what is it?
It's called The Last 100 Days.
Okay.
And there are so many films out about Napoleon. Everybody was talking about Ridley Scott's most recent one with Joaquin Phoenix. Don't watch it unless you want to be frustrated, bored, or laugh your ass off at how stupid it is.
So you're saying Last 100 Days is the good one?
That's a good one. It's a very good one. It's a nice representation of the last 100 day of the Battle of Waterloo.
Yeah. Okay.
Is
that okay?
Yeah.
Rod Steiger plays the last 100 days.
Look at this scene here, and you'll see what I'm saying.
I typed in the new.
Look at this. Look at that. I mean, come on!
Let me go! What's up with taking me a long time, Drew?
You like your old movies, don't you?
Alright, so I'm not going to play that to death, but that's one worth watching. If you want to see a serious effort, if you want to see some great special effects, and what might be an authentic representation of mass cavalry charges.
Was it called The Last 100 Days? I'm trying to find it on IMDb.
Oh, some of these movies, it's like they want them to disappear. I'm not sure why.
How do you spell out the word 100 or what happened? Let me. The last.
The last 100, not 100.
The last 100. Okay.
Right. Can you see it on the screen?
Yeah, I see
there?
It now. Yeah.
Right.
The Last 100 Days.
Or just look for Napoleon. Napoleon Steiger, Rod Steiger. He was a big star back then.
Well, Waterloo is 1970. It's called Waterloo.
Well, they've made so many films. I'm telling you, a good one to watch.
I know. I'm trying to find it in.
What do you mean Waterloo in 1970? Well, that was this. Okay, here we go.
Is it Rod Steiger and Christopher Plummer?
This is a Mandela effect.
Is it?
What do you want me to tell you what the Mandela effect is?
No.
Renaming movies.
Well, yeah, okay. So are you saying...
I showed you... Hey, wait a minute. A couple weeks ago, I talked about the movie. It was a big movie. Kevin Spacey was in it.
Yeah.
Called Casino Jack.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, they've given it a new name now.
Oh, okay.
Now they call it Bagman.
Okay.
Now are both... It's the same exact movie.
Okay.
Why are they renaming it? And it's the same thing with this movie here.
So this
last 100 days of Napoleon. It's Waterloo from 1970, right?
That's what I got here. Christopher Plummer and Rob Steiger.
That's right. It's the same movie.
That's why I couldn't find it.
So I guess what happens is the movie's based on a screenplay. The screenplay has a title. They released the movie with the original title. And
Orson Welles is Louis the 13th or 18th.
What's that?
Orson Welles is Louis the 18th.
Yeah, he has a cameo in it, yeah.
Nice.
And then what they find out is it doesn't do so well at the box office. And so they figure, well, it's a promotional advertising problem. So they change the name of the movie. See? Is that a Mandela effect? Is that a psyop? No, it's just they're changing the name of a product.
The marketing. Rebranding.
Marketing.
Yeah, rebranding.
Right. And this really has an effect on me because I remember the movie when I saw it originally. It made an impression on me. Why have they got to go around renaming it now? If I told you, look for the last 100 days of Napoleon on YouTube.
You wouldn't find it.
Well, I don't know. Here it is on YouTube as the last 100 days of Napoleon.
Yeah, that's true. But you wouldn't find it if you're looking on IMDb.
Maybe they renamed it Waterloo. Who knows? Anyway, once again, if they can go to all this trouble to create what they consider realistic, authentic movie special effects, well, it goes without saying, if they're going to conduct a hyper-realistic active shooter drill or natural disaster or a terrorist event, the budget's unlimited. The budget is unlimited.
Then why do they get such crappy actors?
Well, that's the thing. They feel like they can get away. It's like, why did Hollywood make B movies?
Right.
Who can explain Ed Wood? You know?
Like, that's true.
Yeah, Hollywood actually, the studios actually had an A department, a B department, a C department. They actually had a group that made cheap, crappy movies because those sold well too. They could make a profit off those. And that has to do with the same reason the American people love and worship WWE wrestling. You understand the point I'm making there?
Mm-hmm.
It's because the American people love trash.
Oh, yeah.
They love mediocrity. They love stupid simulation stunts. And they don't care how cheap or tacky it is. Like with WWF, WWE Professional Wrestling, you can bring out a character wearing an Arab headdress and call him the Iron Sheik. And everybody can boo him and throw coffee cups at him and shit in the live audience, you know. Or who was the one who represented the Russians back during the Cold War? Yeah, you can make movies that are idiocratic, that are stupid and mediocre, and I've talked about this, and they don't care. So you say, why do they put up with such lousy, mediocre performances on camera for these simulated plane crashes or whatever they're doing? Well, because they can pull it off without good acting. They now know they can use crappy, mediocre actors. Now, there was something else I wanted to make a point about. And here, I posted Gemma O'Doherty's review of the latest tragedy in Brazil. I don't think we need to go through
it. Did that even make the American media? Because I never heard about it until Fake Nukes Phil brought it up.
Yeah, Phil's been covering it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at the performance of, you're right, some of these people on camera. First of all, why would you even go on camera so soon to such a tragedy?
Yeah.
I couldn't get on camera and face anybody.
Me neither.
So, anyway, so let me tie this in.
Oh, you stopped sharing your screen there.
Yeah, let me bring it back again.
And by the way, apparently what happened is YouTube conked out, and then once you stop playing the movie, then it came back. So that's funny. That's hilarious, actually.
Yeah, Ben-Hur is a movie worth watching. I would have thought everybody's seen Ben-Hur. Everybody saw it in my generation, just like they saw the Ten Commandments, you know. But big epic films, King of Kings, The Greatest Story Ever Told, which are about the Jesus narrative. But as you said, and these were classy. I got to admit, they were very classy. They were very expensively done. But then you got the cheap side. You got the mediocre side of American culture. And I think what we're seeing there is, I think the full emergence, this still isn't showing up. I want to see if you can share my screen here.
Okay, go ahead.
Here we go.
Trump's small business team equals WWE.
Right. So let's look at the history of this. I've got a long-term historical perspective.
Howard Lutnick.
Yeah, you have to tell me who he is. I never heard of him.
Isn't he the guy from the lead actor on the 9/11 companies? What was the company that he said was wiped out in one of the Twin Towers? Oh, Cantor Fitzgerald.
Not Cantor Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Every time. Oh.
That's Howard Lutnick.
Every time I hear Cantor Fitzgerald mentioned, my ears perk up because they are so deeply in on the 9/11 hoax.
Absolutely. Really. The number.
And they're running around now.
Are you kidding me? This guy is back?
Well, I wasn't looking at him. I was looking at Linda McMahon. Because look, you got to have a long-term view of this, guys. Everybody's forgotten how far the Republican Party has slid down the hill. Originally, they had Charlton Heston at the convention. This would have been back in the 80s or the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I remember that. Hey, take a look at this on Clues for him, Lynn. Cantor Fitzgerald, top 9/11 Vic Sim.
Oh, yeah. Clues for him is the place to go for the dope on Cantor Fitzgerald's.
That's where you get the real stuff.
Yeah, they do exhaustively detailed breakdown.
Look at this. Simon says, since it's currently 9/11 memory time, and this is from September 12, 2019, my mind went back to the infamous ABC interview with that Jewish gentleman who allegedly was or still is the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, the brokerage firm which reportedly lost 658 employees on 9/11, i.e. about 25% of all alleged 9/11 casualties.
Oh, that means that's going to take me into my most important point that I'm making in this whole thing. But I haven't. That's the money. I want to get to that later.
Here's the billion-dollar tier.
Of the 1,000 Cantor employees at the Trade Center, only 300 are accounted for at this time, and none was at the building at that time. This immense human loss has truly devastated.
And listen to this one from Wikipedia. On September 11, 2001, Lutnick was dropping his son off at his kindergarten, which caused him to be late for work, thereby saving his life.
Yeah, so we can play that famous Disney song, the theme song at Disney World. It's a small world after all.
Yeah.
Oh, Howard Lutnick, we remember
him. On May 16, 2019, Lutnick hosted a fundraiser for Donald Trump at his home in Manhattan, raising some $5 million, according to the president's aide. So, yeah, he's tied in pretty good.
The other one is Linda McMahon. Wow. Linda McMahon, wife of Vince McMahon.
I'll put a link to this thread in the show notes. But anyway, yeah, let me go back here.
This is WWE, professional wrestling. Now, let me get back to the point.
WWE is taking over the RNC.
look how trashy the Republican Party has gotten in terms of its pop culture profile. It went from Charlton Heston, who originally I think was on the board of the National Rifle Association and was showing up at Republican conventions. He was their guest of, you know, their big Hollywood personality. Then we got Clint Eastwood. You remember Clint Eastwood sitting up on the stage at the Republican convention?
Yeah.
And that wasn't so, it was kind of a bust. He was old. He was decrepit, you know. And now we get Hulk Hogan. So I'm for any of you Republicans out there, I'm tracing the trajectory of this path that goes from Hollywood star Charlton Heston to Hollywood star Clint Eastwood to WWE legend Hulk Hogan. Wow. That's where the Republican Party is at now. So, yeah, the two chairs of the Trump transition team, Linda E. McMahon and Howard Lutnick, will oversee efforts to identify and vet potential political appointees and draft executive orders and other plans to implement Mr. Trump's policy proposals. Who is Linda McMahon? Linda McMahon, born 1948, is an American political executive, business executive, and retired professional wrestling performer. She served as the 25th administrator of the Small Business Administration from 2017 to 2019. McMahon, along with her husband Vince McMahon, founded sports entertainment company Titan Sports, later renamed to the World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated, where she worked as the president and later CEO from 1980 to 2009. That's a long time. During this time, the company grew from a regional business in the Northeast to a large multinational corporation. Among other things, she initiated the company's civic programs, Get Real and SmackDown, Your Vote. She made occasional on-screen performances, most notably in a feud with her husband that culminated at WrestleMania X7, something I know you didn't watch and I didn't watch.
No, no chance.
Now, Vince McMahon, her husband, or former husband, I don't know, is now in some kind of trouble, we're told.
Oh,
he's accused of,
today?
I don't know.
As in now? 2024?
Yeah, at the moment. I guess.
But let me tell you this. I am no pervert.
WWE founder Vince McMahon under investigation by the feds for sex trafficking.
Women! Get up!
The bombshell report comes 1 week after a former staffer filed a lawsuit claiming McMahon raped and trafficked her. I'm Ann Jeanette Levy. It's Friday, and this is Crime Fix. Vince McMahon has been under investigation.
Okay. We don't know what the story is there. Who knows? But of all things, fortunately, we have Jake Gibson, who posts as Jake the Asshole.
He's saying that Vince McMahon was swapped out.
Yeah, he's saying Vince McMahon has been replaced by an actor. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, it's got the same dimple.
Vince McMahon is at the center of some very serious allegations.
Very strange.
There are an overwhelming amount of YouTube videos that have been released lately
that looks
that
like a mask.
Discuss all the terrible things that Vince supposedly did behind the scenes.
The way he's moving his head.
This is not going to be one of those. Yeah.
So everybody can watch that. I posted.
So the guy on the left is wearing the mask. That looks super masky.
Right, right. On the right, that's Vince McMahon on the right, but. It's just, I don't know.
When
it's
was
like
this guy on the left videoed? What was that from?
Well, that's more recent. That's since he's been criminally charged with sex trafficking.
Oh, the one on the left is the current one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's super
masky. He looks older. I mean, it looks like, first of all, he should have gray hair. I don't know. It's just, the whole thing is
super creepy.
Yeah, let me play out more of it.
Videos. I'm not here to talk about what Vince supposedly did. Instead, this video is going to go in an entirely different direction. I grew up watching pro wrestling and loving it. I was a huge wrestling fan when I was a teenager, so I am very familiar with the WWE product. I have a distinct memory of what Vince McMahon looked like, what Vince McMahon sounded like, and I know what Vince acted like when he was on camera. So when I look at recent videos of Vince McMahon from the past few years, I'm left wondering, is this the same Vince McMahon that we started with? Did they replace Vince McMahon with an imposter actor? Is this current Vince McMahon character some sort of actor wearing a highly realistic mask? Because let's be honest, this person on the screen doesn't look like the original Vince McMahon. And I know what people are going to say.
Look at the neck.
I'm going mask, man. This is mask.
Total silicone mask. Yeah.
Wow. There's just the motion of the back and forth. It looks
not
very
natural.
Yeah, it's very rigid. It's slightly, it's not a smooth motion.
Well,
that's
why do
awesome.
We care? You know, look, here's the thing. What's disturbing to me.
I like politics is the entertainment wing of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, yeah. And there I'm looking at J.D. Vance, the Republican nominee for vice president, who's a total like a Hollywood fabrication, this guy. From, you know, he's got so many different names and all kinds of things. Yeah, like Barack, remember
so
Obama.
So you don't believe the J.D. Vance backstory at all?
No. No, I don't know what to believe. There's so many contradictions in it,
yeah.
So many inconsistencies. It just doesn't make any – and also, Hollywood promoted the hell out of him. But here's the thing, guys. Now understand what I'm saying here. So we went from Charlton Heston to Clint Eastwood to Hulk Hogan. That's the Republican Party. Well, Linda McMahon, wife of Vince McMahon – what the hell is she doing running the Small Business Administration for the Trump presidency? What makes her an expert in small business? Well, I can tell you. She's the WWE. That's what they're telling us, guys.
WWE has taken over the RNC.
Yeah, the future of business in America is faking it.
Paulie Galtieri says the eyes give it away in that Vince McMahon clip.
Yeah. The future of business, any business in America, is about faking it.
Well, at least in the political circles. There are real
right.
businesses
the Democrats,
in America.
The Democrats are the old WWF, the old World Wrestling Federation. And the Republicans are the new shiny WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. So now the spectacle has, it's basically taken over. Right? I mean, what was it Baudrillard said about this? Let me find it. Well,
who's Baudrillard? Some philosopher?
Yeah, he wrote, Simulation and Simulacrum. The idea that after a while, all you get is fakery and it's not related to anything real anymore. It may have started out as an imitation or a parody of something real, but now it bears no relationship at all to anything real. Like this fake Trump assassination.
Yeah, that's gone into the memory hole, that Trump assassination.
Well, just
event.
Like a WWE match.
Yeah, you know. It's really, it didn't get a lot of play. It didn't have any lasting power. Is that because people didn't believe it or they don't care?
I think both. I think it's both.
Okay.
Now, what's the real aspect of it? And I know I'm often accused of being a realologist. Well, now I'm going to show you the reality behind it all, because we talked about Cantor Fitzgerald and the huge cash payouts around 9/11. This was something I think we racked our brains over. Here were the airlines. Here were the insurance. I mean, this is the most massive insurance fraud in history. Although maybe the sinking of the Titanic was an insurance fraud too.
Yeah.
We'll never know how much insurance fraud is going on. But what makes this work is the money, the cash payouts. And if you look at the judges who were involved in this, Kenneth Feinberg was one. And who was the other one? The two judges.
I think Feinberg was the big one, yeah.
Yeah, most of the 9/11 payouts. And the participation of Cantor Fitzgerald was all about the payoff. All about the payoff. So I'm telling you, this is the economic model for the future. And I call it the big shakedown. And now I'm going to show you how it really plays out and how it's destroying the society itself, how it represents the decadence and degeneration of the society itself.
By the way, I don't know if we're streaming on BitChute. I thought we were at one point, but I'm looking over at BitChute right now. I don't see any action over there. So Oh, well, I tried.
Well, for some reason, this forum doesn't always take me where I expect it to. I posted a... Okay, here we go. And the search doesn't always work.
The search is fantastic on the forums. What are you talking about?
No, let me
Oh,
let
it's
me...
absolutely great.
All right, let me
You're
try
in your
it
control
again.
Panel.
Because it comes back and says you cannot... You're, like, if I search for Baltimore...
Okay, go ahead. Let's see.
Because I'm looking for the cash, the payoff. Here we go. All right. Cities self-destruct. The shakedown is for real.
Okay. What are we talking about here?
And it's gone national and expected to go global. This blew my mind when I heard it. The city of Baltimore strikes a $45 million deal with CVS. CVS is a chain of pharmacy like Walgreens.
Yeah, I know.
To resolve ongoing opioid litigation, bringing total recoveries for Baltimore to $90 million. Today, Mayor Brandon M. Scott and the city of Baltimore announced they have reached a $45 million settlement. This was last week.
Right. What are they going to do with that money if they ever get it?
You know, who knows? Right here. Ongoing litigation. Now, let me, and there's more to this. There's more to this because the state of Illinois is doing the same thing. CVS and Walgreens to pay $17.3 billion.
Whoa, that's going to wipe them out.
In Illinois opioid settlement.
This should short Walgreens.
Now, I don't need to remind you the state of Illinois is run by the Pritzker family. In fact, J.B. Pritzker, I think he just spoke at the Democratic convention, or he's supposed to speak today, tomorrow or something like that, the governor of Illinois. He's behind the Trans Maoist thing. So Mr. E should definitely take a close look at the Pritzker family.
Yeah, I sure he has.
Because they're putting their money into the trans thing. They really are. So here's where the narrative goes national. It's not just Baltimore we're talking about. CVS and Walgreens have agreed to pay a combined $10.7 billion to settle allegations they failed to adequately oversee opioid painkiller prescriptions, thus contributing to America's opioid addiction crisis. The funds will be distributed to states, local governments, and federally recognized tribes. Of course, the Indian tribes are going to cash in, too. And we'll go toward opioid crisis abatement. So you ask, what will the money be spent on? I guess it'll be spent on drug treatment programs, maybe needle exchanges. CVS will pay $4.9 billion to states and political subdivisions and approximately $130 million to the Indian tribes. Walgreens will pay $4.95 billion plus more than $750 million in fees for attorneys and costs. The payments will be made over time. And then it goes on. So what is the target here? I ask, what's the net blame game? It's not the doctor who prescribed the opioids.
It's the people with the money.
Nor is it the advertising consultants or TV networks who pushed it to the masses.
How about the doctors?
Right. Nor is it right the doctor who prescribed it. I just said it's not the doctor who prescribed it. It's not his fault. It's not the advertising consultant on TV or the TV commercials that push it.
Yeah,
it's not the manufacturer who owns the patent in this particular settlement.
It's the distributor, the pharmacy.
Right. Nor is it the incompetence of the FDA. Really, it should have been the FDA that tried to rein this thing in. No, in this settlement, it's the retail sales distributor at the very bottom of the supply chain who's being shaken down. This is a shakedown. And that's what 9/11 was, a shakedown. And that's what this is. It's a shakedown. The only step below to whom the cost of the shakedown will be passed on would be the patient or customer. Because Walgreens or CVS is just going to raise prices, right? So you put it all together, and what it spells to me is the controlled demolition of the retail prescription sales business.
It's going online.
Yes, I I explained that, that so much business is going online. But here's the problem with that. What happens to what we call compounding pharmacies? Now, if you've got anybody here that's really familiar with the pharmacy business, you understand that you used to go to a pharmacy and they had some basic ingredients.
And they pound them together and just
They prepared it, right. And there are even pharmacies that specialize in this now. It used to be every pharmacist knew how to do compounding. That's what pharmacy was, how to prepare a compound, a chemical compound. But, and imagine if what you need has to be compounded, there's an additional step. So, and consider that pharmacy chains like Rite Aid, Walgreens, or CVS have been closing stores in urban areas due
where
to
there's
the cost
crime,
of shoplifting.
Yeah,
they're moving out anyway. CVS says it will close 900 stores by the end of 2024, which is 10% of all its shops as it moves to an online strategy. And of course, amid a rampant increase in shoplifting. So I say it's the controlled demolition of the retail prescription sales business that local stores are going to be devastated. And I think this is the end. It certainly would spell the end of the compounding pharmaceuticals locally. So what really needs to be done? Well, we need to break up the big pharma cartels and abolish the corrupt agencies, the FDA, the CDC, NIH, NIAID.
Amen. Get rid of them. Get rid of them.
We need to pursue criminal fraud, extortion. This is a shakedown because it's either going to be the taxpayer or the patient, the drugstore customer that's going to pay for this. So it's a billion-dollar shakedown. And we need to pursue criminal fraud, extortion, and racketeering charges against the key players in the COVID shakedown and the heists associated with the COVID hoax. The entire medical system has to be overhauled. I don't expect any of that to happen without major social upheaval and much suffering first. So, yeah, we live in the United States of shakedowns. Explain to me the logic of punishing the drugstore for selling you a prescription written by your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the retail distributor have anything to do with it? Justify it to me.
Money.
You know, morally, ethically, legally, take it into court and justify it. You're telling me if I run a local drugstore, let's say I'm not part of CVS or Rite Aid or Walgreens. If I run a drugstore, I can be sued because I filled a prescription for OxyContin or fentanyl or whatever. I can be sued. That is a shakedown. And that's how the cities are now going to be financed. What's happening in Baltimore with this opioid settlement and the state of Illinois with the $45 billion settlement is a shakedown that I guess is going to cover the bankruptcy of the cities and their corruption. So, yeah, it's all a shakedown. And this is where the fake becomes real. This is when you start seeing drugstores closing up. And what happens if you live in one of these inner city neighborhoods where the shoplifting has been going on? CVS, Walgreens, they no longer have any reason to maintain a pharmacy in your neighborhood. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that. All right. Any last closing comments? Because we're going to wrap it up. We've been going over an hour. It's been a different kind of call today, but I appreciate your forums. Fakeologistforums.com is where you can find Lynn and all her research. Please feel free to search and go over there.
I'm arguing that there are real consequences
to fakery.
To fakery. And the shakedown and the heist are the biggest. And, you know, we're looking at a process. It's like with Rome, the final days of the Roman Empire, really. The corruption becomes so overwhelming that there's no longer any incentive for anybody to make a living honestly. Why make a living honestly when you can shake down your local small business or your local large business, either way? And you ask the question, you look at 9/11, you say, why did the insurance companies go along with Larry Silverstein and Frank Lowy and make these huge insurance payouts? Well, it's a shakedown. It's a shakedown. Behind the hoax.
Yeah.
Behind the fraud.
That's the real part, you figure.
Is extortion. And that's what's running the society. That's what's financing it. That's what's driving our ethics. And don't think that young people don't see this. Any child, any middle school student reading that article in the New York Times or the Baltimore Sun about how Baltimore is solving its opioid crisis by shaking down the local retail drugstore chain for billions, or millions in the case of Baltimore. Actually, it would be billions because CVS is the only one being shaken down. Walgreens is too. And you want to know why prices are going up? This is the same pattern you're going to see with everything, with all commodities. Everybody's got their hand out for the shakedown. Everybody's sticking it to you. And America, the society we're living in at this point, it all becomes a question of, can you game the system? Can you squeeze cash out of it? And who are you going to shake down next? This is just so monstrous to me. I don't know how. And you ask, well, why didn't the lawyers argue the case? Why didn't the retail pharmacy chains like Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, Giant Pharmacy, whatever? That's where I get my pharmaceuticals from, the Giant Pharmacy. Why didn't they go into court and say, hey, we're not responsible for what your doctor writes? We're not responsible for the fact that people became addicted to this.
Yeah.
Why are you shaking us down? But no, they wouldn't do it.
It didn't really seem to hit their stock in the last little bit. The stock's been pretty steady around.
Well, that's why I maintain stock prices are completely artificial. I maintain that all markets now are artificial. There is nothing natural about any market for any service or commodity in this society now. Nothing. You keep calling it capitalism, supply and demand, bullshit.
All right, we got a caller before we run away here.
Hold time, 1 minute, 19 seconds.
Who's on the line? Where are you calling from?
Hey, fakeologist, this is Jay from Texas.
Jay from Texas, you got the last word because we're going to wrap her up.
Okay, yes, I just heard Lynn talking about why did the insurance companies let Larry Silverstein pull it?
Yeah, well, that's just a story.
It's a rhetorical question, obviously.
Do you know what floors were hit? Like the actual companies on those floors that were hit by the that were supposedly, offices?
Canner Fitzgerald was a big player, but as far as I'm concerned, there was nothing in those buildings. It's all a hoax.
But what I'm saying is, do you know what they were looking into? Those insurance companies. Do you know what they were looking into?
What was the – tell us the official story. I forget.
Well, like, they were looking into all the fraud from the – basically the Cold War fraud. All the black budget sites and that. And then World Trade Center 7 was supposedly the accounting offices for the FBI and CIA.
Yeah, that's the MSM Plus explanation. That's the – stole the gold. They had the gold
she's just telling all the story. We call a fake story. That's
right.
It's trying to build the the hoax.
It's more chicken feed. Of course there's corruption going on.
Chicken feed, you got that right.
Right, and of course they would have used controlled demolition as an opportunity to destroy evidence and obstruct justice. The whole thing
Just like with the Oklahoma City, because that was a federal courthouse for a lot of of cases, right? A lot of trafficking.
Yeah, they claimed that evidence that was going to be used against the Clinton administration with regard to a number of things, China, selling secrets to China, the uranium deals, a lot of things. They claimed that those files were destroyed in that bombing. And you always hear that with these things. But like I say, that's just, to me, that's MSM. Yeah, it's very possible that that's true. But the whole thing is a staged event. So why are we even, you know, it may or may not be true.
Because,
it's kind of irrelevant at this point. Because shakedown
fake
is
nukes,
for real.
Oh, because fake nukes puts his, he talks about that subject, about the ledgers of the banking. I guess those are where the accounts would be, right? But those are impossible to find, right? And you would have to have the exact, like, paperwork and numbers and everything to actually know where it all went, right?
Well, it's about money laundering. Everything is about laundering the money, so you have trouble tracing it and tracking it. But that is what these federal agencies are supposed to be doing full time. They're supposed to be tracking the laundering of money from criminal enterprises. That's what the RICO statute was written for. So it's like they surrendered completely to this. It's like they've surrendered to the mob. That's what they've done. To the gangs, to the
gangsters,
surrendered to the gangster syndicate. That's what this is. And it's all a gigantic shakedown and a gigantic heist. And none of it makes any sense. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense for
well, maybe because the currency doesn't make any sense, you know, like maybe because the way that they're looking at, like, because maybe it's like a war on resources, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Always. The money itself. That's the big fear I have. At what point is the money itself going to be so fake that merchants refuse to accept it, and we're going to get a super hyperinflation? Boy,
you're going to get a new currency to replace it. That's for sure. All right,
well,
Jay, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand
what
he's getting
at.
They always tell you, oh, evidence was destroyed in this, as though that were the main motive. Well, you know, that's just a sideline, right? The main motive is the shakedown.
Shakedown. All right, thanks, Jay. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
There goes Jay. Absolutely. There goes us. Thanks, Lynn, for all your discussion tonight. Thanks for indulging me with the Elvis. I'll play a little bit of the Linda Thompson. I guess I can't remember who she was with regard to Elvis.
Linda McMahon.
No, I'm going to play Linda Thompson, who was at the Elvis Fest this week. And I think she's an author or something. Elvis liked her. And we'll call it a night. So thanks a lot.
Jurassic Liars says Elvis was the Antichrist.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, that's true. That's what he said. Yeah.
That's
funny guy. All right. Well, we'll see you next week, Lynn. And tomorrow, Fake Nukes Phil will be on. And Thursday, Tim Osmond is coming up. We'll do a joint presentation of whatever. So make sure you call in. All right, Lynn. Have a good night. I think she's already gone, and we'll play a little bit of Linda Thompson. Don't forget, this is value for value. You pay whatever you think this show is worth to you. I think it's worth a cup of coffee a show, so do the math. However many shows you listen to, fakeologist.com/donate. Don't forget, we take cash. If you go to fakeologist.com/donate, send your cash, send your checks made out to cash. And we also take PayPal. Buy me a coffee, Monero, Bitcoin, you name it, we take it. Donor box, you just need a credit card, you don't need an account. I said PayPal, I think. Anyway, that's it for tonight. Let's listen to a little bit of Linda Thompson discussing Elvis as we play out. Have a good night.
You helped Angie out on a tour of the mansion with Linda Thompson. And I have done that before, and I said, I will continue to do that. You don't even have to make this phone call. So I would like to bring her out here right now to talk to you. Linda Thompson.
was hugging Larry backstage because I haven't seen him for so many years.
Yeah.
So it's great to run into all the people that
that's been
I knew back in another life. How's everybody? You must be exhausted by now. I know this is a long session. They're going to be worn out.
No, that's what we're here for.
Did you get bathroom breaks?
Yes. Yeah.
That's important to me.
I plan my whole day around that. I was saying that my Elvis week started off back last week with the Mansion Tour with you, and you had a great opportunity to sit and talk to fans. It was a very informal kind of discussion back and forth between you and the fans. And,
so much fun. It's always so wonderful to get some one-on-one time, you know, with the fans. Is that my phone? I'm expecting my fifth grandchild. Today is her due date. It was a struggle getting on the plane to come here because I like to be there, you know, and hold the baby first and all that.
We'll tell Pam. Pam, if she gets the call,
let me know. That's the ring that my son Brandon has, that old-fashioned ring. So, yes, the fifth grandchild. We don't know if it's a boy or a girl. They don't want to know. I said, let me find out. I won't tell you.